Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, Aaron back on the show, joining us here on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Aaron, how you doing? We'll wait before we get Aaron on. There you go, Aaron.
Oh, you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Check, check.
How you doing?
Okay, good.
How you doing, man?
How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing good. Wolves are in the playoffs. Wild are in the playoffs. So life is good sports-wise, but there's so many other things that we have to address and talk about, because I do want to get your Wolves take at the end of this. But the very first thing I want to get to, because there's so much going on, right? Like Steve Bannon, what did Steve Bannon say months ago? He's like, flood the zone, because there's a million different things happening, and you're just trying to pinpoint what you want to talk about. But I want to start with Harvard University. Okay, they've been in the news because there's so many different things that seem to be popping up right now with them being on the other side of Donald Trump, President Donald Trump. Headlines saying that the Trump administration threatens Harvard with a foreign student ban. Also, the IRS reportedly planning to revoke Harvard's tax-exempt status. It seems like Donald Trump just really, in a big way, has it out for Harvard, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's had it out for a lot of these elite universities, including Columbia in New York. And Harvard has been the one that has been standing up to Trump, where, you know, Trump has tried to, under the guise of fighting anti-Semitism, basically force universities like Columbia to cede control of curriculum, of staffing, you know, all sorts of things, you know, basically making Trump kind of like the provost, you know, of the schools. And Harvard has been the one school out of that set that has stood up and said, no, you know, we're not going to abide by these demands that you're making of us. And so to that extent, I think they deserve some credit. Harvard has deeper pockets and a bigger endowment than Columbia, for instance, does. So they have, you know, a little bit more ability to withstand, you know, the onslaught if Trump pulls federal funding or comes after them in other ways. But, you know, it's notable that after Harvard rebuffed Trump and said, no, we're not going to enter into this agreement that will preserve our federal funding, but will basically give the Trump administration control over a lot of what we do here, that Trump then started talking about changing their tax status, you know, going after them in other ways beyond just pulling the federal funding. So I think that kind of speaks to, you know, sort of the mob style governance that Trump engages in.
Yeah, I just, you know, when I look at this in the attack on so many different institutions, do you think that this is what we're in for the next, what, more, 3.5 more years of the Trump administration? Is that every single day or week or whatever that he is going to go after somebody that he is going to say, I'm putting you in the crosshairs. You either abide by what I'm saying that you do, or we're going after you.
Oh, absolutely. You see this with the FCC where, you know, I saw that Brendan Carr, who is the chair, who's a big Trumper, you know, just yesterday was tweeting some of his grievances about NBC and MSNBC's coverage and, you know, kind of threatening them. And so, you know, this is just how Trump does business. And I think the reason that, you know, we're seeing it more brazenly now than we did in his first term is just the lack of constraints around him. You know, the fact that he realizes that Republicans are pretty much going to back him up no matter what he does. And also just the broader disregard that we've seen for the rule of law, for the courts, for judges. So he's more emboldened than ever. I think he tried to do a lot of this stuff during his first term. I mean, think back to his first impeachment, the call that he had with Zelensky, basically asking Zelensky to come up with opposition research on Biden, where he wasn't going to give Ukraine military aid that Congress had appropriated. So what we're seeing with the universities here is kind of the same move, you know, the quid pro quo, only Trump has become a lot more emboldened because I think rightfully he has concluded that there's not going to be consequences for him.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. We're talking to Aaron Rupar from Public Notice here on The Late Show, News Talk 830 WCCO. I think the biggest thing that a lot of people are just kind of frustrated with and upset about is the situation still occurring with Kilmer Abrego-Garcia, the gentleman that was wrongfully deported to El Salvador. And in the Trump administration, they're saying that, no, we're not going to you know, in any way try to, you know, effort to really bring him back, right? And so this is a wrong that needs to be righted. And I appreciate that Senator Van Hollen from Maryland went on the trip to check on Mr. Garcia, was not allowed to see him. What are some of your biggest takeaways from what has transpired with the story over the course of the last 48 hours?
Yeah. Well, the big thing is that this is really the front line of the constitutional crisis that's on the horizon now, because you had the Supreme Court in the unanimous 9-0 ruling saying that the Trump administration had to facilitate, as they put it, the return of Abrego Garcia to the United States. And so then you had Trump and the dictator Bukele from El Salvador, when he was in the Oval Office the other day, you know, kind of making a joke out of this, with Bukele saying, of course, I'm not going to smuggle a terrorist back into the United States, even though there's been no evidence that Abrego Garcia is a terrorist. And you had Trump basically saying that, you know, I'm not going to ask Bukele, you know, to send him back here. And so, you know, you had both of them kind of passing the buck to the other one. And it was kind of a charade. But, you know, so we have a situation where the Supreme Court issued a very clear ruling, and we're seeing the Trump administration basically say that they're not going to abide by that. And now the question is, which we haven't really resolved yet, because it's going to end up probably going back to the Supreme Court in another form, is what consequences, if any, will there be for this? And, you know, the Supreme Court has remedies such as holding other administration officials in contempt and possibly threatening them with jail time. You know, there are ways to kind of get, or, you know, having an injunction that would prevent the Trump administration from doing deportations to third countries completely. But even then, you know, there's a question of would they abide by that? Would Trump violate a ruling like that, like he is in this case? And so, you know, I think this is really kind of the story to watch in terms of how far is Trump going to go in abusing his power, and how far is he going to go in trying to undermine democracy?
Yeah, well, he's definitely, absolutely, and we all understand that he's abusing his power. There's no question about that. I guess one of my big concerns with this story at this particular point, Aaron, is I'm concerned that Mr. Garcia may not be alive at this point. Like, and look, we don't have any evidence that he's dead. We don't know anything. But, like, at this particular point, why in the world would they not even allow the senator from Maryland to even see him face to face? I don't get that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right to be concerned by that. You know, the El Salvadorian prison has, I think, in a couple instances, at least proclaimed that he is alive and, you know, being held down there still. So, you know, that's all we have to go on here. But I think, you know, rule number one of Trumpism is never to admit that you made a mistake or did anything wrong. And so I think there's kind of an aspect of even the act of bringing this guy back to the United States would be kind of an admission that they overstepped and did something wrong. And then, you know, I just think that it's kind of that defiance that we see, you know, it's trying to, I think Trump is kind of, you know, testing the boundaries. How far can he go with this? You know, how far can he go with before the Supreme Court, like, really rebuffs him? You know, because even the decision that I mentioned earlier was written in such a way where it kind of gave him some outs, you know, in terms of what does facilitate mean. You know, the court didn't call for him to put Abrego Garcia on a plane and get him back to the United States right away. It kind of left, you know, the situation open to what we're seeing now, where Trump is kind of dragging his feet here. So, you know, I think that's really what it boils down to. But you're right that even a normal administration in a situation like this would just kind of take the L and say, look, we screwed up. You know, these aren't the type of immigrants that we want to target. This is a guy with no criminal record. You know, he had never been arrested for anything. You know, we want to go after the violent ones, which is kind of what Trump was talking about in the campaign. But I think it's really, you know, the combination of him kind of testing the boundaries and also just not wanting to admit that he or anybody in his administration did anything wrong.
Yeah. Well, speaking of doing something wrong, what is the deal with Marjorie Taylor Greene? She bought, in terms of, like, when the market did before the Trump paused the tariffs, it sounds like she has made some money. And I'm not, you know, just going to try to just single her out. Her face is kind of like the headline person of this, because I'm sure that she's probably not the only one across the spectrum, whether it's, you know, Republicans or Democrats or whatever. But people taking advantage because of insider information and trading and all that, it just seems really, really wrong. It very illegal that these things are happening when everybody in our country is super nervous about inflation, about the economy, about all these things. And then we're going to see, you know, certain members of Congress taking advantage of this.
Yeah, this was really a wild one because, you know, so go back to last week where Trump announces his draconian tariffs, the 10% across the board. And then he had the placard at the press event that had all the different countries, you know, some of which had rates as high as like 50 or 60%. Of course, China's is at like 120% still. But, you know, so Trump ended up rescinding a bunch of the added tariffs a few days later after he announced them, after the financial markets had tanked. And if you think back to the day that Trump announced that he was pausing the tariffs, he posted something on True Social that morning that basically said now was a great time to buy stocks or something like that.
Yep.
And I think this was kind of the fig leaf, because when there have been reporters kind of asking him, like, did you tell anybody that you were going to announce the pause in tariffs? Because what happened was when he announced the pause, of course, the market shot up. So it was very lucrative information to have, you know, that he was going to announce that. Trump has said when asked about that, that, well, you know, look, I posted it publicly on my True Social. You know, I didn't have any, you know, I didn't share any information privately, but I just kind of put it out there for everybody to draw their own conclusions. But, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, based on disclosures that members of Congress have to do whenever they buy or sell stocks, you know, something in the order of like tens of thousands of dollars. So not a small amount of stocks that she bought the day before the pause was announced. And she also sold treasuries. You know, so both of those moves were kind of in sync and, you know, lucrative in terms of what Trump was doing. And so, yeah, I mean, there is a, you know, very obvious question here as to did Trump, you know, tip off some people about this? We've seen him engage in similar conduct with crypto and his meme coin, where he has kind of juiced it on social media by insisting that people should buy it, or now is a great time to buy the dip, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, this Marjorie Taylor Greene example, I think, is one of the most egregious you'll see of stock transactions that by members of Congress that look really, really shady. And I think it's, you know, one of the best arguments you could come up with for why members of Congress should not be buying and selling stocks in the first place.
I agree with you 100%.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're talking to Aaron Rupar, Public Notice Newsletter here on The Late Show, News Talk 830 WCCO. As we let you go, Aaron, real quickly, Timberwolves, Lakers. You like this series, man? What you got?
I'm pumped. You know, as a season ticket holder, just going to the games with LeBron and Luka, you know, that's kind of worth the price of the tickets throughout the season in its own right. You know, I'd love to sit here and tell you that I think the Wolves are going to win this series. I don't really feel that way. I think, you know, having the two best players will prove to be kind of too much for the Wolves to contend with, but I don't think it's impossible for the Wolves to win. And I'm just excited, you know, at one point here, as in my lifetime as an NBA fan, I'm going to get to see playoff LeBron in the Target Center. You know, all the backstory, the history last year with Luka, it should be a really fun series. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'll say this to you, Aaron, and to all the people out there listening, and I hope specifically Shannon Sharp, Wolves in six.
Oh, I love that. Game six at the Target Center.
Wolves in six. Shannon Sharp, I don't want to hear about no Lakers at five. Wolves in six, baby.
And I love the bulletin board material where Ant, you know, is basically saying, oh, I love that everybody's sticking the Lakers. That's how it should be. So I think he's got the right attitude about it. I'm expecting it to be a long and hard-fought series. I know that's not exactly a hot take. If I had to wager on it, you know, I'd probably do the emotional hedging of picking Lakers. Just I'd be happy either way then. You know, obviously more happy if the Wolves won. But, yeah, man, Wolves in six. That sounds good to me. I'd be there for that game. So, amen.
I'll say this, Aaron. This is the funny thing about it. All of the national pundits and analysts are all picking the Lakers, right? But there's something interesting. Go and look at the Vegas lines on the series, and I checked it a couple days ago. If you bet on the Wolves are at plus 170. That doesn't sound like a slam dunk according to Vegas with regards to the Lakers winning the series. I think that the Wolves got a legitimate shot here, and I think it's going to be a lengthy series. So all I'm saying is look, I believe that we're going to have an advantage inside, because I just don't believe in what the Lakers have in terms of their front court, the back court. Of course, you've got LeBron, and LeBron can play, you know, wherever he wants to play. But I think that the way that Rudy's been playing, I'm not saying that Rudy's going to go out and get you 30 or whatever, but I think that we have an advantage inside.
Yeah, you know, and I think that was kind of discounted by a lot of the national people that haven't been watching the Wolves, that Rudy has been, you know, like prime Rudy, you know,
incredible,
going back like 6 weeks now. And if he's that guy in this series, I think that could be kind of the biggest X factor. You know, Lakers going to try and play small, but if Rudy can kind of dominate in the glass and be that lob threat at the rim, That could really neutralize some of the Lakers' strengths in playing small. So I'm totally with you that I think that's a factor that's being underrated. Although I will say that plus 170 is kind of a lot of juice. I mean, that's $10 to win 17. So, if you're looking to have a little added incentive to root for the Wolves, that's not a bad bet.
Let's do it. Hey, Aaron, always a pleasure, my man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, take care. That's Aaron Rupar from Public Notice. Check out his newsletter. He does a phenomenal job right here on The Lake Show. All right, though, we will take a break. And I got a question. Are we the state of hockey or not? We get to that next.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.